Welcome back again to The Stories Beneath, and my name is Margaret McKenna. I'm an artist and a visual storyteller because I believe that every image has a story and every story has an image. Hello everybody and welcome along to a podcast that has been well overdue by now, but unfortunately my laptop has been acting up, the screen has been flashing on and off and it's driving me mad, waiting for a part to come in the post, but it's in a good mood today, so it's not doing anything, it's a loose connection. So while all is good, I'm going to do a podcast. A place that I've been wanting to talk about for a long time, of course, is my neighbouring Loughcrew. And in fact, I thought I had done it, but I have referred to the character which is most connected, of course, to this wonderful place. But I actually haven't spoken about it as such, the whole place. So, of course, and also it's very relevant in terms of what our podcast is about here, which is to do with our old Irish names, place names, and how they've been distorted over the years and how they've changed and to the point where we don't recognise them. It's such a shame because really the stories, as I said, are beneath the names are tell so much, and indeed especially here, because one of the names of one of the areas in particular on the hill is not too far a jump from the Irish. It's just spelt differently, but it actually does tell the story of the character almost of behind the hill. But we'll go into that now in a minute. First of all, the Loughcrew Hills are outside Oldcastle, County Meath. And interesting, Oldcastle actually is a translation. It's not one of the distorted names. It's translated from the Irish because it's Shan Caislán in Irish, which means old castle. And and in English, it's Oldcastle. So it's not a distortion of an Irish name, it is just a translation. But outside Oldcastle, looking down upon the town, really, are the Loughcrew Hills. Loughcrew, in English, is spelled L-O-U-G-H-C-R-E-W, Loughcrew, as in the crew of a ship, for example. But in Irish, it's Loch Craeve. And Loch Craeve means the lake of the branches, Craeve being a branch. So there is a lake up at Loughcrew on the estate. So I'm assuming there is the Snapper estate up there. I've never been up to the lake, actually. So I'm assuming that that's where the name Loughcrew comes from that lake being Loughcrew Lake. But of course, it's generally associated with the ancient cairns that are on top of the hills. And there's four hills. There's Patrickstown. There's Cairnbane East, Carrickbracken, Cairnbane West. Cairnbane, of course, in Irish is Cairn, and Bawn, Cairn being the cairn, and Bawn being the word white. So the white cairn. And of course, that's for the two, there's East and West, and Carrickbrack. Carrick is a rock, brack is speckled. So in Irish, but of course, in English, it's spelled B-R-A-C-K. Rather than B-R-E-A-C, as it would be in Irish, which is generally speckled rocks. So it's a place that is so associated with our mythology. I came down here, 25 years ago. This is why it's so special to me, because I actually see it from my window in my kitchen. I look across the fields. It's about a 10-minute drive away, just about 12 minutes exact to be exact, in a drive to the summit, as it were. They call it locally here a mountain, but it's really a hill. Though it is the highest point in Meath, so there's an amazing view and alignments to so many ancient places and ancient sites across the northern part of the land. You can really see it. Even from Tara, you can see the Loughcrew Hills. So these places were not built by accident. These were well thought out as to where they put these ancient cairns. And I must say, when I see it from my window in my kitchen, it just gives you a lift. It really does. The lighting on those hills it changes from, you know, obviously sunrise to sunset. Dull day, sometimes they look nearly black if you've got a dark sky over them. Other times the sun setting on them just almost emphasizes every little sort of that angle of the sun coming at it, that sort of oblique angle. It emphasizes the lay of the land, and you see the cairn even more spectacular, almost like it's much closer to you than you would on another day when it's more hazy or misty. Sometimes you can't see them at all because of the cloud cover. So it's just a beautiful place. There's a real magic about it. And when you're up on this on the hill, which is a place I often go. In fact, I might go there now shortly for a quick run up the hill just to stretch my legs. It really gives you a lift. It really, really does. There's an energy up there that is it's hard to fathom, really. It really is hard to fathom. It's a real peace of mind when you go up there. Even no matter if there's people or quiet, sometimes there's nobody there. Other times it's busy, very busy, because it's a great place to build to bring kids. And there's a great little place down at the bottom now of the hill, the Lochcrue Megalithic Centre, which has a camping site and yurts, and that's where people can stay. Nice lovely coffee shop. And so it's a lovely little welcoming place at the bottom of the hill. So highly recommend that for anyone around the country to book in and have there's a lovely shop there, including my own cards are there on sale as well, and my own stuff. So not plugging it, of course, here, but anyway, no, I don't have anything to do with the shop or anything, but it's just a great place, great little center to go from and go up the hill for a walk. So Lochcrue itself, as I say, comes from Lochcrea, which is the lake of the branches. And before we get on to the mythological side of it, it's also associated, interestingly enough, with historical figure who I did mention before, and that is Oliver Plunkett, the Saint Oliver Plunkett. It's a very historical figure who, unfortunately, through a series of, I suppose, lies, basically, he was condemned for treason by the, Ireland was under colonialism at the time, was being a colonized country, and the British accused him of being in league with the French, and it was really trumped up charges. It's well known as trumped up charges. Got people out of jail to testify against him. He was condemned and sentenced to death, and he was hung, drawn and quartered in Tyburn in London. But the reason I mention him is because his family was from Lochcrue. His parents are actually buried in a graveyard not too far from Lochcrue, Clonabrainy graveyard. I was out there the other day, and I had to do a picture of it for somebody, so I was up there exploring it and looking around, saw their tomb, and the actual old church that they worshipped in, the ruins of it are in the grounds of the Lochcrue estate, which you can visit. There's lovely gardens there nearby the hills themselves, just at the kind of on the foot of the hills, as it were. So it is a very historic, so that's a more recent history of it. But of course, really what I'm here to talk about is the place, the hills themselves. And we have four hills. We have Patrickstown, Carnbane East, Carnbane West and Carrickbrack. And as I say, Carrickbrack is speckled stone. Carrick stones, brack is speckled. Carnbane is cairn, bawn, the white cairn, east and west, and Patrickstown is the other one which is the most easterly of the hills. And of course it is a most associated with Slieve na Cailí. That's the name of the main hill, which is generally, or the hills they also called Slieve na Cailí. Slieve na Cailí, Slieve is the Irish word for mountain, actually, and that's where often the locals do refer to it, as they say, as a mountain, even though it's not technically a mountain. But Slieve is the Irish word for mountain. It is actually called Slieve na Cailí in English, but we spell it with a V, as in Slieve. In Irish, there's no V in Irish language, so it's S-L-I-A-B-H. And B-H in Irish gives a V sound at the end of a word, so Slieve na Cailí. So Slieve na Cailí is the hill or the mountain of the Cailíoch. And of course, well, now we're really getting into what it's all about. So we can see that the name that everybody refers to this place of, this mountain on Lochcrue, as Slieve na Cailí, is the hill of the witch, and it's called the Witch's Hill, the Witch's Mountain. But the witch is not really the witch, and the reason I say witch is because the Cailíoch is an Irish word for witch as well. It's also an Irish word for nun, funnily enough, because the root word Cailíoch actually comes from an Irish word which means veiled one or veil. So of course, naturally, you can see why it would be definitely associated with nuns, because they wore veils, and of course even with witches, because they were kind of had that veiled appearance. But in reality, the witch is not actually a witch, it is the Cailíoch. It is that ancient deity, that ancient sovereign deity, sovereign goddess deity, probably the oldest of our, in all of the series of goddesses, and on our pantheon of gods, is a very basic sovereign goddess idea. And indeed, the Cailleach, she was said to be, have lived the life sort of through the, her husbands who she had been, had several, she had husbands who came with, who she was with and who died long before her, and her children or grandchildren were like the races of people who came to into Ireland, as it were. It was like she was the creator. She was the one who created the landscapes. She is the one who created the cairns. According to legend, she's meant to have flown across the landscape and have dropped her stones from her apron to make the cairns. And it's not only in Loch Crew that that story is attached to. It's also in Loughlin Lay, for example, in County Cavan. Also, she's associated with Sliabh Gullion, the famous Sliabh Gullion and Armagh, which I did refer to before in a previous broadcast. And of course, she is the Cailleach, who is often called Gara Vóg, the Cailleach Mhéara, associated with the Beara Peninsula in the southwest of Ireland. She's associated with Scotland and the Isle of Man. She was often depicted as being sort of blue color, and certainly in Scotland, a blue sort of coloring on her skin. She's the crone aspect, often sometimes considered to be the crone aspect of the Morrigan, even. Although she is actually far older deity, it's almost like she's the source of the deities, the really original being that made, I suppose, we have the Christian God, the God who created the world in 7 days. I suppose Cailleach was a little bit like that. Although, again, interestingly enough, we have this vulnerability about the gods in Ireland, where they actually can die. And in fact, she did die, well, according to mythology. And I'll come to that in a minute. But she is also meant to be the flip side of Bridget, because she is the goddess of winter. Bridget is the goddess of the spring, the summer. And it's said that, you know, on Imbolc, the 1st of February, or strictly the 1st of February, it's celebrated around the 1st of February, but in actual fact, it's a cross-quarter day, which means that it comes halfway between the solstice and the equinox. So it's usually somewhere around the 4th, the 5th of February, depending, it slightly moves around a little bit. So in and around that time, that if the Imbolc is on a bright, sunny day, the Cailleach is able to come out from her resting place, gather her sticks and keep her fire going for longer. So in actual fact, it means that the winter will drag out for longer than it should. Whereas if the day is a bad day, well, it means the spring is actually about to come upon us. So there's a whole lot of legends about the Cailleach. She's often associated with animals, in fact, even like the hare. She's often shape-shifted into the hare, which is often considered to be an animal of the other world, the Irish hare. It's one of our real native animals. And also, even the owl, because the Cailleach is one of the words for the owl, so the crone or the witch of the night. And being probably because it's so stealth, the stealth of the owl during the night, it's almost like this creature that can come in and just, you know, without being seen, it's almost like it's veiled against the night sky. Although even the barn owl, which is quite bright, but it's so fast and so astute in how it hunts that it's unseen to the last minute when it's too late. Of course, the place itself, aside from all the mythology, and of course, up on Sliabh Na Cailleach, there is the cairns, and this is what it's all about, really, the cairns that are associated with her. And the main cairn, of course, the one that we all know, as it were, down here, and anybody who knows Loch Crew will know, is Cairn T. That's the big cairn on Carnarvon East, and it is the one that is associated with the equinox, the two equinoxes in spring and autumn. I've been lucky enough to be in it when the sun came in and hit the chamber at the back of the sunlight hit the stone at the very back chamber. These cairns, they straggled between the two hills, or by the three hills, actually, all right across the hills, in fact. But the ones of Patrickstown are gone now. they have been demolished, unfortunately, long ago. They have been destroyed and been used for building and walls, etc. So we can't, it's really impossible to even trace them. I was up there once trying to look around and kind of got bogged down nearly in kind of very bad land up there. So it's very hard to really find anything. But I did come across some, what looked like the remains of something, but I couldn't be too sure. Certainly, Cairntee is magnificent. It really is magnificent. Unfortunately, we don't have access to it anymore. The Office of Public Works have put a gate that is permanently closed now and locked, which is really unfortunate. And we're hoping that maybe something can be done about it, because that we'll actually start proper restoration on it, because it seems that previous restoration work has actually made it more insecure. That's one stuff that was done years ago. Instead of actually preserving it, it's gone quite the opposite. These are Neolithic chambers. You're talking over 5,500 years ago that these people built these. Originally, there would have been quartz on the outside. It would have been quite spectacular, to say the least. The gleaming, you can just imagine the sunlight gleaming off the white quartz. And the sunrise, especially at the alignment on the equinoxes, show that these people had an amazing amount of knowledge, astronomical knowledge, how they watch the skies, how they watch the path of the sun and the moon and the stars. These were not people who just randomly built these places. They knew exactly where they were doing it and why they were doing it. And we have to stop and think back, really, I suppose, and I've referred to this before, is the fact that people in those days, they didn't have calendars. There was no awareness of day by day time or hourly time in the way we would obviously nowadays. So people were farmers. So they really needed to know when to be planting their crops and when to harvest, etc. So by doing this by following the astronomical universe, the time in the universe, time as it were, they were able to kind of manufacture their own type of calendar in these monuments. And these point times are very important. You know, Imolg and Lunasa, Bealtaine, all of the cross quarter days were so important in the ancient world. They were marks of time, but also the equinoxes. So you'd be watching to see what would be happening at these times. Would you be planting? What would you be planting at certain times? When would you be harvesting? You know, gathering your crops in. All these markers were very important in the ancient world. And of course, there was rituals about them. There was thanks to the gods, perhaps the Cailleach. We do not know exactly who at that time, because we were going back into really ancient history. But you can assume, and pretty well assume, that because that these people had a belief system that was probably quite elaborate as well. Certainly, the artwork is very interesting. We have there's so many spirals. There's zigzags. There's what look like flower patterns, almost like we don't know. Is it water symbols? Is it symbols of the sunlight? It definitely looks like sunlight. Is it flowers or seeds? Perhaps grass seeds, maybe. It's really very, very hard to interpret them. But to the people of the day, these places had a huge amount of meaning. And Cairntee is probably the one that we most associate, because the light at the two equinoxes, the light comes straight down the chamber and hits that back, the stone of the back passage, which is highly decorated. It's an amazing moment to watch that sun come over the horizon and see this. It really is. It's just special. And I'm lucky, my birthday actually is on September the 21st, so it's right on the equinox time. So I have been lucky enough in the past to be able to be in there on my birthday and watch the sun going across the back wall of the chamber. Unfortunately, you can't see it now, but even to be up there, even if you can't go in, it's still amazing. There's, as I say, it's surrounded. There's so many other cairns up there. For example, first of all, leave Cairntee though. There is also the chamber. There's the chair. The hag's chair, the witch's chair, the wishing chair, the Cailleach's chair. It's got several names, and it's like a big. It's almost like a big altar, really. It's like a curbstone that goes around one of the curbstones that goes around the cairn, and it is like, to all intents and purposes, like a large chair sort of altar, very different from any other ones that you'd see anywhere else, like in Newgrange or anywhere. It's quite a spectacular stone, and it is, according to legend, she sat there and on her chair and sort of viewed across the landscape, her kingdom, as it were, her dominion. It said you can sit up and make a wish as well. of course, the story, one of the stories is connected with her is that she, how she formed the, when she did form the Cairns, is that she was jumping across the landscape, throwing the letting the rocks fall out of her apron, and to show her dominion, or her dominance, I should say, and her it's almost like her expertise, her prowess, and being able to be a god of the land. But unfortunately, she tripped and fell, and was supposedly buried in a cairn on Patrickstown. So that's kind of interesting, because it has that vulnerability about a goddess who had lasted for thousands of years, perhaps, and then finally dies and is buried on Patrickstown, according to the mythology. Okay, on the other hill, Cairn West, we have Cairn El, which is another outstanding monument. Unfortunately, we are not allowed to go up that hill at all. I have to have a bit of a bee in my own bonnet about that, because I honestly believe you have to be careful about these things. But, you know, these lands were taken over back in Cromwellian times and handed to certain families. And it is one of branch of family, of a particular family, that is no longer allowed, does not allow people to go up and see the cairn. And yes, there's farms on it and you have to be careful, but I believe there should be a right of way to go up. It is, after all, our monuments. They are monuments that go back 5,000 years, and I do believe we must be really careful and really respect them, not to climb all over them, not to disrespect them in any way. But I do believe we should be able to see them and be able to visit them as our ancestor did, and they are our ancestors. These Cairn El is a spectacular monument, and I have never been there, and I would love to get up there. It's a monument that has an amazing amount of artwork as well. It has a big stone, because it has a sort of sandstone inside, but this has one large pillar which stands out. It's called the Whispering Stone, and it is aligned, this place is aligned to Samhain and Imbolc. So you're seeing again this alignments to the certain times of the year, and it's quite a spectacular event, because it lights the stone, the pillar stone, and looks very white against sandstone. It's amazing, but unfortunately we can't go there now at the moment, for the foreseeable future. And there are others, Cairn H, that on beside it, it also has artwork. And indeed, back on Sleibhne Cailí, beside our Cairn T on Sleibhne Cailí, we have Cairn T-U, which also has, it's an open cairn. It is just, you can walk out into it, into the passage, and there's no roof on it. And you can see the artwork there, again, a series of spirals. Also, Cairn S, which is a little, which is a cairn just in front of Cairn T, again an open one, it is said to be now, they're discovering that it's aligned to Beagsinne at the sunset. So all in all, these places their secrets are being discovered every day, because this is only a new, relatively new, what would you call it, discovery or realization that there's more to these cairns than meets the eye. It's like a whole calendar system up on that hill. And indeed, it seems like there was far more cairns than are visible now. I highly recommend it. So many tourists, when they come to Ireland, they do the Atlantic Way, they do the Eastern Seaboard, they do the northern coastline, southern coastline, and they skip the whole inside of Ireland. And really, inland Ireland, actually, probably, even though, I mean, look, the coastlines are absolutely amazing. Of course, there's so much historical stuff all around Ireland. But certainly the inland, if you want to come for the really ancient stuff, really, there's so much down in around Meath, but not just Meath, Cavan, you know, everywhere. I mean, Carlow, I was out there a couple of weeks ago, Kilkenny, all these places that have dolmens, and Roscommon, there's just amazing places, and they're often left off the tourist trail, which is such a shame. So really, I hope you get a bit realised that how special this place is, because it really is special. There's so much more I could talk about. I know it's probably a bit piggledy-piggledy, this podcast, because I know the place. Sometimes it's harder when you know a place well, because you're kind of coming out, oh yeah, there's this bit, and then, oh, then there's that bit, and then there's the other bit, so you kind of end up kind of going backwards and forwards to pieces. So I hope it wasn't too higgledy-piggledy for you. But I just want you to understand the sense of the timelessness of these places. And that's what I get when I look across those hills. And it's a nice evening now, and I can see there's a glow. I can't really, just from where I am sitting right now, I can't quite see it. But I'd have to actually go to the door and walk a few paces, and I'd be able to see the Lochcrew Hills. But I'd say there's a nice glow in the sky, which means that the hills are, the hills probably a nice light on them at the moment. So I actually might go up there for a quick little run up the hill. It takes about 10 minutes to walk up. It's a steep enough little walk, but it's grand, it's fine. There's no edges, no drops, no nothing like that. Easy enough, and it's just so peaceful. Oh, you just couldn't wish for better now, to be honest. I'll leave it on a note actually. Here, I'm going to read this. This is actually, for any of you know that Jonathan Swift, the writer, he was the writer of Gulliver's Travels, which many of you would know. Jonathan Swift, he was the dean of St. Patrick's Cathedral in Dublin, and in the 17th century, I think it was, and he wrote Gulliver's Travels. But he also lived not too far from Lochcrew at one stage, and he went up to the Cairns. So this would have been a time when, I'm going back here myself again before I even read this. Conwell, he actually was the person who documented the Cairns properly in the 1860s. I think he wrote it was the 1870s he wrote about it, 1860s, and he documented the Cairns properly, and but up to then people knew about them, and they knew about the stories. The stories were there about the Cailleach. So these places have been in folk memory for so long, but they were kind of abandoned. The people, they weren't sort of recognised on maps. In fact, O'Donovan had put, he had been an ordnance survey surveyor before that, and there was maps, and there was very little on them to do with Lochcrew. So when Conwell came along and saw them, he said, "Oh my God, why have these not been looked at before?" So he actually wrote about them. But when Jonathan Swift was there, which was a good couple of hundred years earlier, he actually wrote about Lochcrew, and he had heard the stories of the Cailleach. So this is 1720, so it was 18th century, sorry, I'm wrong, 18th century, early 18th century. He's credited with this poem anyhow. And this, I'll leave you on this note. This is it. It's about the Cailleach's building of the Cairns on Sleibh na Cailleach. And it goes like this. Determined now her tomb to build, her ample skirt with stones she filled, and dropped a heap on Carn Moor, then stepped 1,000 yards to lower, and dropped another goodly heap. And them, with one prodigious leap, gained Carn Beg, and on its height displayed the wonders of our might. And when approached death's awful doom, her chair was placed within the womb of hills whose tops with heather bloom. And that's the poem by Jonathan Swift, and I leave you with that. So I hope you enjoyed it, and it wasn't too higgledy-piggledy for you. I enjoyed telling it, and I hope to see you sometime on Lochcrew. Shlán go fóill agus go raibh míle míle maith agaibh.